Hi, welcome to the Whole Healing Hour. I am Jenny Storms, and I'm here with Dr. Blake Large. And let me tell you a little bit about myself. I am a registered nurse. I was originally in New Jersey and Pennsylvania, and I have relocated here to the state of Colorado. I am the mother of Jackson Storms, Jack's Canada Journey. A lot of people may be following that on Facebook. He is a 16-year-old. He has Dravet syndrome, and he is on cannabis. He's been on cannabis since 2012, and I have been treating him both in New Jersey and in the state of Colorado with cannabis. He takes THC as well as a CBD. The CBD is probably higher, but he is responding well. Since starting the cannabis treatment, Jack is no longer on phenobarbital, clonopin, Onfi, steripentol, Depakote, the ketogenic diet, and he's also off of albenzol as of 4 days ago. Yay, but troublesome as well. And he's still on just a tad bit of Keppra, and that's it. He has Dravet syndrome. I am a nurse. I have been specializing in this. I've been helping many families discover cannabis and learn how to do this since this was very unpopular back in 2012 before CNN and everybody else started making it really famous and the cool thing to do. So I do help a lot of families. I do it very low-key, very one-on-one, helping them. It's not something that I broadcast everywhere. So if families want help, they want introductions, I explain it to them and help them get to know cannabis. So with us today is also Dr. Blake Large, so let's hear about him.
Hi, my name is Dr. Blake Large. I am a chiropractor, originally out of Atlanta, Georgia, and I have moved here with my daughter to Colorado Springs, and I have a practice there at Vibrant Health Clinic. The name of the practice is Living Large Chiropractic, and a lot of my patients use medicinal marijuana for a variety of symptoms, but what I provide is chiropractic care to help their bodies be in the proper position for the nervous system to work appropriately. And we're excited to be here today and to tell you a little bit more about what we do and how chiropractic care can help.
Okay, and our guest with us today is Justin Kander. He has just written a book. It's pretty exciting. I'm looking forward to reading it. I don't have it yet, but it is called Cannabis and Cancer. And it's a lot of scientific stuff related to cancer with the cannabinoids. And Justin, I'm going to let you explain that a little bit better than I can. And I'm excited to hear about your book.
Excellent. So my name is Justin Kander. I've been involved in the cannabis extract movement for over almost 7.5 years now. And my specialty is naturally inclined towards the use of cannabis to directly treat cancer. So many of us are familiar with the use of cannabis to alleviate the side effects of chemotherapy and radiation, such as increasing appetite and reducing nausea and stopping pain. But there is extremely detailed scientific evidence showing how the primary phytocannabinoids in the cannabis plant, mainly THC and CBD, directly kill or inhibit virtually all major forms of cancer. So my book breaks down the scientific evidence organized by the type of cancer, so showing how, THC fights brain cancer, how it fights breast cancer, cervical cancer, prostate cancer. So I have it all organized by which cannabinoids fight which cancers, and I also integrate that with how our own endocannabinoids kill cancer cells, because that's really what ties everything together. There are plenty of things that kill cancer cells in preclinical models that don't work in humans, but we already make compounds in our bodies, the endocannabinoids like anandamide and 2-AG, which also kill cancer cells through similar mechanisms as phytocannabinoids. So the scientific evidence alone is extremely remarkable. And then I also pair it with anecdotal evidence of humans who are reporting remissions from a wide variety of cancers by using concentrated cannabis extracts.
Is the science that you're using in the book, is it very scientific, or is it something that a layperson's going to be able to understand? Or do they need to get their doctorate to understand the book?
Well, if you read it front to back, then anybody can understand it, because whenever a new term is introduced, and I explain what that is. But if you just open to you just skip to prostate cancer and start reading the studies on that, then there's going to be a lot of things that you know, I can't explain every scientific concept again. So when it's first introduced, I explain it there. And then if it comes up again, you know, I just mention it. So it does get extremely scientific because I explore the, you know, each paper, exactly what's happening. So I'll give an example of one pathway about how cannabinoids fight brain cancer. So we all know that cannabinoids activate the cannabinoid receptors. So the way that we feel psychoactivity from THC, for example, is the THC binds to the CB1 receptor and activates it, and that causes the psychoactivity. But that is also the first step in many of the anti-cancer effects. So for example, THC on a cancer cell will bind to a CB1 receptor, and this starts to instigate a cascade of chemical things that will lead to apoptosis or programmed cell death. So it attaches to the CB1 receptor. It increases levels of ceramide, which is an apoptotic mediator that causes stress on the endoplasmic reticulum and increases a variety of endoplasmic reticulum stress-associated proteins. And basically, it's like a chain reaction. Like, you know, for the endoplasmic reticulum, the step is ceramide, P8, ATF4, CHOP, and that downregulates a survival pathway known as AKT. That's a protein that helps cells survive. And that's a big thing with cancer, is that these survival pathways like AKT that help cells survive are overactive in cancer cells. So that's the final step, is that cannabinoids reduce the activation of these survival pathways. So that's the chain, like ceramide, endoplasmic reticulum stress, and then that stress causes basically reduced activation of the survival. And then there, you know, there, that pathway is common across many cancers. And then there's many other pathways that use, you know, different proteins that are involved in cancer cell growth or metastasis or just survival, that the cannabinoids stop those processes. And the book goes very deeply into the mechanisms of the different cancers.
That sounds really fascinating. Being able to facilitate that apoptosis or cell death of those cancer cells is absolutely huge when it comes to fighting cancer. Do you anywhere in your book talk about using conventional pharmas with the cannabis as well, or is it just strictly cannabis for treatment of cancer?
Well, both scientifically and anecdotally, there are many cases where they combine, you know, where either people are using chemotherapy or radiation alongside the oil, or in the scientific studies, they combine the cannabinoids with chemotherapy or radiation and find that the cannabinoids greatly sensitize the cancer cells to the chemotherapy or radiation. So it basically makes them much more susceptible to it. One of the reasons that brain tumors are so resistant to treatment is that there's these stem cells that are within the tumors, which are very resistant to chemotherapy and radiation. You can kill the main glioma cells, but the glioma stem cells are basically resistant. So one thing that CBD does that's really unique is it promotes the differentiation of those stem cells into more differentiated cells, and that makes them much more susceptible to chemotherapy or radiation. And anybody who's familiar with cancer knows that it is often categorized based on the differentiation. So a poorly differentiated cancer is very close to a stem cell. It's not very developed. So, you know, chemotherapeutic drugs, it's hard to target because they're not developed. But if a cell is more developed, a well-differentiated cancer, then you can target those pathways that develop in a healthy cell to better kill it, interestingly enough. So that's one of the unique ways that CBD fights cancer, in addition to directly, you know, killing the cells and inhibiting growth.
Ah, very nice. Yeah. I wanted to talk more about the cannabinoids and the research that you've been doing and some of the research that's in your book, and how long of research has been done on cannabinoids, and maybe some of the more specific research that's in your book. If you could give us an example of what type of research study those were, and how long the research has been in on that.
All right. So most of the research has been done between 1998 and the present. Christina Sanchez and Manuel Guzman really took the lead on examining the anti-cancer actions of cannabinoids against brain and breast cancer. So that started back in 1998. But the earliest study that first showed the potential was in 1974 at the University of Virginia, that tested THC, CBD, and I believe CBN against Lewis lung carcinoma, and they found good results back then. But basically for 20 years, nothing happened from it until Christina Sanchez and Guzman. So they really rekindled the interest in it, you know, led to a lot of other researchers getting involved. And so what these studies do is they're mainly preclinical studies. So they use cell cultures, you know, different kinds of cancer cells that are standardized, known as cell line. So it's, you know, one line, it's all the same cell. And it's used in all kinds of cancer research, not just cannabis. So, you know, they'll take these cancer cells and they'll add cannabinoids to them and see what happens. And then in order to determine the mechanism of what's happening, they'll use antagonists to either receptors or other pharmacological processes. So, for example, if you want to know whether THC is killing a cancer cell via CB1 receptor, you add a CB1 antagonist that blocks the CB1 receptor. And then if the cannabinoid no longer kills the cancer cell, you know that it was the CB1 receptor was critical to the action. And then same with the other things. Like if you want to know whether a certain protein is involved, like the P8 protein that's involved with endoplasmic reticulum stress, you can block that protein, see whether the apoptosis still happens, and then you know whether that protein was critical in the process or not. So these scientists are amazing in that they've been able to elucidate the exact pathways by which cannabinoids are directly killing the cells. But then they also use animals. So they'll inject cancer cells into the animal. Usually that's how they develop the tumors in the animal. And then they'll administer cannabinoids either through injection or, you know, putting it in their water or something. And then over several weeks, they'll determine how the cancers grow in the cannabinoid treated mice and the control mice. And there's many animal studies that, and I have many of the graphics in my book, that show the animals, the tumors dramatically decreasing when using the cannabinoids. So the preclinical evidence is extremely strong. And then I want to throw in that there actually is some human evidence in the preclinical studies. But for example, Christina Sanchez, they injected THC into humans with glioblastoma multiforme, one of the most aggressive brain cancers, and found that it reduced different proteins that are involved in the growth of blood vessels to tumors and in the invasion of the tumors into other tissues. So they proved that these effects are indeed working in humans in a scientific setting. And then, of course, you have people all over the world reporting the same things from their own self-treatment.
Okay. And this being the whole healing hour, I want to kind of expand on this or see if we can. And taking the cannabinoid, thank you, taking the cannabinoids and using those to treat cancer, are there other supplements that may boost the response of the cancer to the cannabinoids? Are there other things such as, you know, typical vitamin C, vitamin D, garlic, anything like that? Has there been any information on other supplements? You know, and I know that people that are not using the cannabinoids are using arrays of supplements to try to fight cancer cells. Some with little success, but that's different for each case. But wanted to know if there was any research that you have done or any of the other scientists working in the field on other supplements to maybe help support the cannabinoids.
Well, there's definitely many other natural substances that exhibit, you know, cancer killing activity in the preclinical studies. And I have looked a little bit into that just out of general interest to see, you know, how other herbs, how they're killing cancer cells, how does it relate to phytocannabinoids? And there is some similarity. Like I mentioned earlier, the AKT pathway, which is when that's active, you know, that's promoting cancer cell growth and survival. And cannabinoids reduce AKT. There are other herbs that also reduce AKT in cancer cells. With that, you know, there's always the question of, are these preclinical results going to transfer to humans? And I just don't know as much about the other herbs. But in general, it's definitely very important for people to work with their doctors or whoever to determine the right supplements to use, because there are so many. It's just crazy how many supplements exhibit preclinical anti-cancer activity. So it really is a very unique case in determining what supplement profile to use for each patient. Same with determining the cannabinoid profile, because different cancers need different ratios and amounts of cannabinoids to respond most effectively to. And it's the same with other supplements. It's up to the individual to find what works best for them. And through continued research on a large scale, we can start to identify trends of what cancers and what people respond best to different formulations of cannabinoids and other herbs. Yeah, there just needs to be more research on it, but there's no doubt that the other herbs have a very important role in the holistic cancer treatment process.
Well, I agree with you, and I think more research needs to be done, and we know that that takes time and money, those are things that we are short of most of the time. One thing I wanted to clarify is the difference between, I think a lot of our listeners know what cannabinoids are, but what a phytocannabinoid is, and what makes, what's the difference in those, if there is any, because I am unaware myself.
All right. So phytocannabinoids are just the way to, that refers specifically to the cannabinoids in cannabis. So THC, you know, cannabidiol, cannabinol, CBC, you know, there's all the cannabinoids in the plant, because we also have endogenous cannabinoids that our own body makes that are very similar in structure and function, in many cases, to the phytocannabinoids. And it's just a way to differentiate. So in our body, we produce the two main endocannabinoids, the endogenous cannabinoids of our anandamide and 2-arachidonoyl glycerol, 2-AG, and these are the compounds that naturally activate our CB1 and CB2 receptors. That's why we have them. It's not so that they can bind with the phytocannabinoids. They're there so they can bind with the endocannabinoids, but the phytocannabinoids in cannabis bind, especially THC, also bind to the cannabinoid receptors, and that's why it works, is because we already have this system in us that is producing cannabinoids that interact with the receptors, so that's why the phytocannabinoids work.
Okay. All right. Excellent.
I have a question in regards to the cannabis and choosing a treatment with hormones. I've recently been encountering a couple of patients who've come to me for help with cannabis, and they have a hormone responsive cancer. How would you treat a hormone responsive cancer different from one that doesn't respond?
Well, I think what you're referring to there is the estrogen receptor positive for breast cancer, where there's been some information on THC potentially promoting the growth of that cancer. And I don't actually know too much about that, because I just heard some things. Until more is known, I think with the hormone receptive, it's probably better to use higher CBD than THC, at least in the case of the estrogen receptor positive breast cancer. That's another thing there really needs to be more research on. I wish I could say more about that. But when in doubt on those things, you know, you just have to track the patient response very carefully, because THC, I think you always want at least a little bit of THC. And if by tracking the results very carefully, if you see that the cancer starts growing, you know, in that case, you can lower the THC or increase the CBD. And that's really all you can do. And I doubt that in every case that THC is bad for that cancer. But, you know, it's always necessary. And it's important for people to find the combination that works for them.
Can you get cell apoptosis, which is the cell death? Can you get that with CBD only, or a higher CBD and a lower THC?
CBD has been shown in preclinical studies to directly kill cancer cells, but in practice, it seems that it's not as effective as THC for one reason or another. But there have definitely been people, a select few cases that I've heard of, who've used predominantly high CBD oils with very little THC and seen amazing results from that, which could be due to the case that CBD is killing it through other mechanisms or stopping its growth so potently that the immune system can come in and kill the cancer as well. But in general, for cancer treatment, you always need at least a little bit of THC, and I believe in the majority of cases, a pretty significant dose of it, because that is showing to be a more potent inducer of apoptosis than CBD.
Amazing. One of the things that I've been told in helping these few patients I've been working with is that smoking is fine. It's the oils, the high concentrate, the high levels. So considering that we really don't know, would you agree, disagree, or say we wait for more research on whether they should stick with maybe for the nauseousness and the vomiting, the side effects of the chemo, to just smoke but not take in those high levels, the 1 gram a day recommendation, and that way they could get their THC through that oral route with smoking.
I haven't seen any. The only problem with the hormones that I've heard about is potentially with THC. I personally believe, if the THC is showing to be a problem, then you should use a higher CBD oil. And then in terms of if you're trying to use cannabis to directly fight the cancer, then you need to use some kind of concentrated oil. But not everybody wants to use cannabis to fight the cancer. And for many people, smoking is enough. And if that is what the person wants to use, then that can be extremely effective. And it can, in many cases, it can be more effective than the oil for stopping nausea and improving appetite because it's so rapid. When you take one hit of cannabis, it only takes, a couple seconds to feel the effect. Whereas when you use oil, it takes, several minutes and it takes a lot longer to process. So for people using cannabis to only manage the side effects of chemotherapy, or even those using oils to directly fight the cancer, implementing smoking or vaporization can be a great add-on for dealing with those breakthrough pain events or nausea or anything. So it definitely has a great role in cancer treatment. And always will, I believe.
Well, Justin, with your extensive knowledge on the chemicals and what goes on with the neurology and the brain, I'd like to talk a little bit more from a chiropractic standpoint. We look at the body and removing interference between the brain and the body, where the brain sends the signals. And we know that cancer can cause a lot of interference between getting signals sent from the brain to the body the way that they need to be sent. So I was curious, when we were talking about the receptors and how the cannabinoids bind to the receptors, just exactly what takes place in that cascade? What are some of the neurotransmitters that are released? Does it help with pain? Is it strictly inhibiting growth of the cancer cell? Are we going in and killing the cancer cells? What does that look like?
So there are four primary ways by which cannabinoids fight cancer. The first is the most potent method is the induction of apoptosis, where cannabinoids bind with receptors, or in some cases don't bind with receptors, receptor independent effects in order to induce programmed cell death. So all cells have the capacity to undergo apoptosis, the programmed cell death process, once they become too damaged or old. But with cancer cells, they stop, they lose the ability to undergo that natural process, and cannabinoids restore that ability. So they kill the cancer cells in a very natural way, in the way that healthy cells are supposed to naturally die out. A lot of chemotherapeutic drugs kill cancer cells by necrosis, which is where the cell membrane explodes and, it causes a lot of inflammation. And I think that's where you get that neurotransmission interference, when the cells are exploding and there's all these, cytokines and cellular messaging signals all over the place. That's going to interfere with neurotransmission. But with apoptosis, the cell breaks itself down in a very controlled way so that you don't have, sea of just dead cell material floating around. So that's big. And then cannabinoids also reduce the proliferation of cancer cells. So when cells are going through the cell cycle and, synthesizing new DNA and, preparing for reproduction, cannabinoids will stop the cell cycle and make the cells stay in one of the phases so that they don't reproduce. So they're stopping the reproduction of cancer cells. And then for tumors, a huge aspect of tumor growth is that they need to develop new blood vessels in order to feed themselves with glucose and oxygen. And cannabinoids stop the production of these blood vessels to tumors by decreasing the chemicals that signal for the growth of those blood vessels. And then finally, they stop the metastasis and invasion of cancer cells into other tissues. So, when the cells are trying to invade other tissue or spread to a distant organ, the cannabinoids inhibit their motility. So those are the four primary ways that they fight cancer. There are a couple other special circumstances which are pretty cool, but those are the four main things.
Okay, so the endocannabinoids, just kind of focusing on those again, it sounds like to me, and forgive me if I don't get this correct, but it sounds like to me, not only are they fighting cancer on their own, but they're actually supporting the body's own immune system to help fight that same fight to kill the cancer as well and support the health of the body, not just fight the cancer cells.
Absolutely. So I haven't seen too much research on how anandamide works with the immune system to kill cancer, although I have no doubt it does. But there actually is very interesting research showing how, you know, the phytocannabinoids do it. Like, for example, with melanoma, CBD, there's a large infiltration of immune cells into the cancer area that can cause its growth and further, I believe it can also contribute to metastasis as well. And so CBD will reduce the amount of immune cells flooding into the cancer and then decrease its growth. So that's an anti-inflammatory, anti-cancer effect. And then there's another case with lung cancer cells where the cannabinoids increase the amount of a molecule on the cancer cells called intercellular adhesion molecule 1, ICAM-1. And it does exactly what it sounds like. It's intercellular adhesion. So it makes the cells really sticky. And so white blood cells going through, you know, the body can more easily latch onto the cancer cells and then digest them. So it's, you know, the both THC and CBD increase ICAM-1 on cancer cells that makes them more sticky so that the white blood cells can more easily attach and digest them. So it's working with the immune system through multiple routes in addition to the direct actions in order to kill the cancer.
What kind of cancers are you seeing most of the research being done on that you're looking at and you're including in the book? Where are we making the most progress?
Pull it up and go through exactly what kind of cancers are examined. It really is amazing how much research is out there. So for I examine brain cancer, breast cancer, cervical cancer, cholangiocarcinoma, colon cancer, Kaposi's sarcoma, leukemia and lymphoma, liver cancer, lung cancer, multiple myeloma, pancreatic cancer, prostate cancer, rhabdomyosarcoma, skin cancer, urothelial carcinoma, which is bladder cancer, basically, and assorted cancers, because there's a couple studies that look at more than one cancer. All those major cancers, I'm sure most people haven't even heard of rhabdomyosarcoma or cholangiocarcinoma, but cannabinoids are working against those as well.
That's amazing.
Yeah, that's the rhabdo, I believe, is a soft tissue cancer. Is that correct?
Correct.
Yeah. So, you know, staying on topic here, but kind of changing lanes. With the cancers, have you done any research also into different types of maybe a bacterial infections or viral infections or even just stress level that the cannabinoids may help with? Because I think we can all agree that there is no one cause of cancer. And just the many effects of the world that we live in and our health lifestyle choices can lead us all to a road to where we can expose ourselves to these types of cancers. But have you looked at any types of the bacterial or viral cascades and how cannabinoids may be helpful in preventing or fighting against those?
Well, I haven't seen any research cancer-related that connects bacteria or viruses to the pathogenesis of the cancers or how cannabinoids inhibit that. However, there are definitely many studies showing how cannabinoids exert direct antibacterial and antiviral activity against the worst bacteria and viruses. So, for example, THC, actually all the major cannabinoids are shown to kill MRSA, MRSA, so that's one of the, you know, worst bacteria that we're having to deal with that cannabinoids can kill. And they also inhibit the reproduction of many viruses, including HIV. Cannabinoids work directly to inhibit a variety of processes. Let me just read one statement from the HIV related thing. And actually that actually does does have to deal with Kaposi sarcoma. That one does relate to HIV because Kaposi sarcoma is very prevalent in HIV/AIDS patients because of their damaged immune systems, and cannabinoids are effective, very effective against that form of cancer. So let me, all right. So for example, there was an April 2010 study that used the simian immunodeficiency virus, which is basically the primate form of HIV, and found that chronic THC treatment resulted in lower plasma viral load, lower lymph node proviral DNA, and lower viral gag RNA, irrespective of disease stage. So the takeaway from that is that it's inhibiting the virus directly and lowering the amount of the genetic material that is necessary to, you know, lead to the further reproduction of that virus. And then there's more studies showing how it decreases mortality from SIV and decreases SIV viral replication. So it's definitely stopping the reproduction of very dangerous viruses. And I would strongly believe that that somehow, you know, relates to the anti-cancer effects as well, especially with the Kaposi sarcoma thing that shows it does work against virus-related cancer.
Well, that's great. I think that shows us all the hope that we still have for cannabinoids and what the future holds. And what we can look forward to learning is that cannabinoids can make a great difference in our health, not only by themselves, but also just supporting the natural way that the body functions.
And if someone wants to get your book, where would we be able to get your book?
It is available on Kindle. So if you search cannabis for the treatment of cancer on Kindle, it should be indexed.
And if you could provide us with a link, we'd be more than happy to give it to all of our viewers. I think it's been very informational. I've learned a lot. Cancer is not necessarily my strong point, but you've made it easy to understand. And thank you so much for being with us today.
Absolutely. I really appreciate it. If there's anything more you want to know or anything more that I can do to help, please ask.
Absolutely. Justin, wonderful. Thank you so much for your time, and keep fighting the good fight out there. Appreciate it.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate this, and have a great day.
Thank you. Bye-bye. Too. Welcome to the Whole Healing Hour. This is Jenny Storms, registered nurse. I'm also a member of the American Cannabis Nurses Association, and I do specialize in cannabis nursing. I'm here today with Dr. Blake Large.
Hi, hello. Hi, yeah, I'm Dr. Blake Large from Colorado Springs, Living Large Chiropractic, located inside Vibrant Health Clinic. And I am here to share my views on natural holistic healthcare.
Natural living.
Natural living, the only way to do it. Unfortunately, it's the road less traveled, I think, in our country. Mm-hmm. But we're looking at making a movement and trying to uproot that.
Yes.
and get back to our roots and live more naturally and do the things that we need to do to pursue health, not just cover up our symptoms, but to actually make the body healthier and allow us to deal with what our society and what our world gives us.
Yes, and that can be so encompassing. There's so many different topics. We've got vaccines, GMO, alkaline diets, acidic diets, food sources, medicines, antibiotics,
absolutely,
medical care. I mean, it's so wide.
Yeah, there's a whole list of things, and it can be overwhelming at times for patients and people that come into my office. You know, I often find that it's just they've got too much going on, and they continue to throw more medications or, more reps even, they're trying so hard to pursue health and to get healthier, where health is really simplistic and can be simplistic, and it's meant to be simplistic. We're meant to have it already in our bodies, but it's how do we express that? How do we get that health to come to the surface and really shine? And a lot of times whenever we're living in conventional ways, we find that taking substances or eating a poor diet or not being active and not pursuing health, puts us in a fog, and it covers up that health that's inside of us and kind of dims our health light, if you will. So what we want to to do through, you know, my branch of health, which is chiropractic, is turn that light on and get that light shining and help boost the body's health through a nervous system that has no interference with it. So we want the brain to be able to communicate with the body so that we can live our lives at a healthy, optimal level.
So what are your recommendations for a healthy, optimal level? Start with diet to make it simple.
Goodness, yes.
Yeah. But there's so many other layers as well. I mean, what would be your recommendation? What supplements, what foods should we make sure we get in our diet every day?
Exactly. And there's so many things, and it's such a tough question because we're used to thinking that, well, we can all just do this high protein, low carb diet and we're going to be healthy. But that's far from the truth because we are individuals and each individual needs their own set of nutritional values. There is no range. We are not a range as individuals and therefore we should not live in a world of ranges. We should seek out the proper nutrition that our body needs. And it may not be the same as what your spouse needs or as what your child needs, but we have to take care of ourselves before we can take care of others.
Well, since we don't all have a barcode that tells us what we need, how do we go about figuring that out?
Yeah, there's several methods that we can use to figuring that out. One of the things that I utilize is clinical kinesiology. Clinical kinesiology is a branch of chiropractic care that actually asks the patient's body what is right for them. And we can test substances much like an allergy test would be. We can test different types of products and food substances to determine what the body wants and what the body doesn't want and what is right for that specific individual and not just what, you know, our basic food groups are. And, you know, if we eat whole grain, we're going to be healthy. That is, that is far from the truth because most of the whole grain in this country is in some way a GMO or processed, and that's hard for our bodies to recognize. And when our bodies can't recognize nutrients, it makes it really hard for them to utilize that nutrient. So therefore, we have to use more energy breaking down a foreign substance, and that causes an inflammation reaction, an immune response, and that's where we find ourselves in America, especially with the poor dietary decisions that most make in this country. We find ourselves kind of behind the eight ball on that, and already one leg down whenever we're trying to pursue health. But let's not get discouraged because there are simple ways to go about health and dietary issues. And I guess the most simplistic that I could think of would be, you know, if it doesn't grow from the ground, then you probably don't want to ingest it in your body. If it's not a natural substance, if it's got dyes or preservatives or anything like that, we want to steer away from that and get our bodies back to basics. And by basics, I mean vegetables and fruits and good choices of meats, legumes, the beans, different types of natural substances that we were meant to ingest because they're on our planet. You know, if we're using our educated mind to make food.
Food-like products?
Food-like products. Thank you. Yes, it's so true. Yes. It's your body doesn't recognize it as food, and that's why it causes problems.
Right.
Now, these problems might not manifest as soon as you take a bite of a whatever
right.
it is that you're eating.
Though, it's huge.
Yes, but over the years, it's going to accumulate in your system, and not only that, but it's going to be taking energy from the very organ systems that are taking the time to break down these foreign substances. That's taking energy from other parts of the body and leaves you susceptible to illness or dis-ease, as we would like to call it in chiropractic. It's not disease. It's just our body in a state to where it's not functioning optimally. and it's not at ease in the way that it should be.
Under stress.
Yes, exactly.
One of the things I found helpful when I go to the grocery store with my family's needs in mind is I literally don't shop in those middle aisles. I shop the perimeter. That's where you're going to find your milks, your meats, your vegetables, and your fruits. And you still have to be selective in that because you still have to go with a non-GMO or the organic. But you have to shop the perimeter. And you're going to find that, you know, you may go down an aisle for rice or a bean because you can get the dried beans, but you really don't shop all those other aisles. And it actually makes it kind of easy. You just shop the perimeter.
Yeah. We've been, you know, growing up in Oklahoma, you know, we ate well. We had a garden and everything was natural and good. And then, you know, once I went off to college, it was it got a little more challenging. You know, there wasn't somebody there cooking for me. There wasn't somebody leading the way for me. So I had to take the reins by myself. And, you know, you're exactly right. There's so many choices out there. Just the perimeters mm-hmm. of the grocery stores seem to be, you know, what actually comes from the earth. But there are so many other products that we have made for convenience, really, most of all. And which I get it, you know, I mean, there is just not enough time in the day mm-hmm. sometimes to do the things that we need to do. And it does take a little planning and a little more effort to not go down those middle rows in the grocery store and get dinner from, mm-hmm. you know. But I think health is something that takes a little effort, but it takes a lot less effort to be proactive about being healthy than be reactive about being sick.
Correct. And if you plan enough and you do it enough, it's routine. I mean, I don't think about it anymore. It's every once in a while my daughter's like, well, I want the ho-hos or the ding-dongs or the Twinkies. And I'm like, what aisle is that on? It actually takes more effort now to think about that because I haven't been down those aisles for so long. And sometimes we just still kind of forget that aisle and we don't pick it up. But you know, there's different strategies you can do. But looking at shortcuts, a lot of people are on naturally nutritionally deficient diets. Mm-hmm. So if that's the case, how would they go about trying to figure out how to supplement? I mean, it's all great in theory to say that there's, you know, everybody's unique and individual, but how do you help someone figure out what their body needs and how to supplement that, whether it be with natural foods or to go down that supplement aisle?
Yeah.
I mean, I was at Sprouts the other day, and I was so shocked at how many supplement aisles there were. Because when I was a kid, there was like vitamins. That was it. Part of an aisle.
Big business.
Yes. And so what do you look for in some of those supplements? I mean, we know in food, you look for non-GMO, you look for organic. What are you looking for in the supplements that you want to avoid because it's toxic? I know for my son, soy. And soy's in everything, whether it be the lecithin, and I never say that word right, but anything soy, oil, protein. It causes problems for him. So I know what I'm looking for, but how do other people know what to stay away from and what to look for?
Yeah. I wanted to touch on something that you said earlier about the nutrient poor foods that we eat. And mm-hmm. that's a very important subject because you do want to be eating nutrient dense mm-hmm. foods.
Yes.
You know, and not a lot of food. And not a lot of variety of food at each meal. You don't want a whole bunch of stuff. Just
you don't need six courses.
Yeah, for those people that are, you know, that are having trouble, you know, I understand we have families and children that have many needs, but you want to keep it simple. And you can keep it simple. That's the good thing is you can keep it simple and you can be healthier and give your family a healthier meal than what you might think. You don't have to overdo it. And I feel that's what a lot of people have is just pressure on them to be that, you know, that stereotypical mom, you know, or stereotypical dad. You
gourmet
really
meals.
Got. Yes, exactly. Mm-hmm. And it's, you got to knock it out of the park every day, or you want to at least. And you've really got to cut yourself some slack there because there's just being simplistic about your diet will increase your health and the health of your family. As far as supplements go, you know, there's a whole there's a billion-dollar industry out there, and the supplement companies are vastly different. There are some really bad supplement companies. There are some really good supplement companies. And in between, there's a whole bunch of other companies. And, you know, it's like, well, how do you know which one mm-hmm. is which?
And which type? Do I need high bioavailability? Do I need concentrate? Do I need organic? Just vitamin C. There's vitamin C, there's quercetin, and there's so many other Cs. There's B6, B12.
Exactly.
I could go broke trying to supplement all my Bs.
And that's a really hard question to answer because there really is no one answer for it. We have to be selective, and you have to do your due diligence about what you put in your mouth. You know, you have to know where your food's coming from. You have to know where your supplements are coming from. You can't just walk into the store and buy something and you know, trust that it's going to actually help you or give you the nutrients that you need. Now, with supplements are, different. If you can go without supplements in life, but it depends a lot on your diet. And that's why supplement companies have become so big in this country, is because our diet is poor.
Mm-hmm.
So we're not getting the nutrients we need. So we turn to the next best thing besides eating the foods that provide those supplements. We turn to, yes, gel capsules or tablets, mm-hmm. And we'll take a handful of those and then go eat
McDonald's.
You know, fast food. Yes.
Taco Bell.
Exactly. We'll just go and grab something, right? Just to kill the hunger pains.
Yep.
Right? We don't even care about what we're eating. Well, we need to look a little further into that and give food a little more thought.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it doesn't take much. And just I guess briefly, what I do, and I'm a single father, what I do to feed my family is I go grocery shopping, and I go grocery shopping on Sundays, and I bring the food home, and I will cook the food on Sunday. And so my meals are prepared. My daughter's lunch is made for the week on Sunday
night.
Less
temptation.
Right. And I have it portioned out, right? And I just put it away, put it in the fridge, and whenever it's time to go, we have whatever we need, you know, and some things are partially made for the week, and then we just throw them in the oven. And, you know, after I come home and get home at, you know, usually 7 o'clock, you know, and it's time, you know, it's bath time, and it's, you know, spend time with my daughter, and who's got time to cook? Well,
nobody. And I actually have a friend and a website that I recently encountered, which was really awesome. For $150, you can make 15 meals.
Yeah.
But again, you do it all on Sunday or a particular day.
Sure,
it doesn't have to be Sunday. But you do all that cooking and you put them all in the freezer. So, mm-hmm. you know, they're not going to last 2 weeks in the fridge, but mm-hmm. you put them in the freezer. And when you're ready, you pull that out and you finish baking it. You mm-hmm. finish doing whatever needs to be done.
Yeah.
But there's no thinking. There's no temptation. There's no, that chocolate cake looks really good. Or it's going to take less time to make brownies.
Yes.
And make those choices. So I totally get that. I think it's an amazing way. Maybe we could find that link and put that up for everybody.
Yeah, absolutely. Definitely. And it saves time. It saves money. You know, I have people coming into my office that are wanting to be healthy. They're unaware of what chiropractic can do for them. And their main, other than, being ill, their main concern is their time and their money. You know, all of a sudden they come into my office not feeling well, and whenever it's time for care, I often see the shift turns to time and money.
Yes.
Which I understand. And I think, just with the topic of today's show being a dietary issue, pre-making some meals on the day when you do have time.
Mm-hmm.
Gives you opens up so much time throughout the week,
and it saves money.
And
so
it saves
you hit both of them right there.
Of money. It saves a lot of money.
A lot of people I talk to have trouble understanding what is GMO, what is organic, what is USDA approved, what is the importance of antibiotic free meats and pesticide free vegetables. I mean, as a professional, can you share and explain some of that? Because it's sometimes overwhelming. And I think we lose people on that too. And they're like, oh, but it's just cheaper to buy this apple at 49 cents as opposed to that one at $1.49.
Well, absolutely. And what happens whenever we are ingesting the pesticides that are sprayed
and on the vaccines,
the plants,
and the antibiotics.
Yes, all of that. So whenever the for those of you out there that that drink dairy milk, cow's milk, you know, the cattle industry uses a wide array of antibiotics and you know, hormones and different substances to, in their mind, I guess, to keep the cows healthier. I think what it really is to boost production. Yes. Because that's that boosts income. So whenever the cows have the antibiotics, it's passed down through the product that we're purchasing at the store. And whenever that product enters into our body and the different pesticides or antibiotics or hormone agents that the dairy farmer used, those are now directly passed to our body. Yeah. And our body doesn't need those products, and it doesn't know what to do with those products. So all exactly. of a sudden we're spending it's like downloading a virus onto your computer. So now we're going to have to spend a lot of time inside our body trying to remove that substance, and that takes energy, and that produces stress in our body. And stress is, you know, most people don't have a shortage of stress in their lives right now. So we don't need that extra little bit of stress from our diet. You need to know where your food comes from. And I found that whenever I knew where my food was coming from, I started eating a whole lot healthier.
Yes.
Yeah, mm-hmm. it was easy to make good decisions once I actually did a little due diligence and you know, paid attention to what I was eating and where that food was coming from and how that food was raised and how that food was treated. Yeah. And I think once we all get you know, to that level, that that moment, I think it really turns on a light for you and allows you to see things in a different way. But I went through the motions of eating for many years of my life, and like I said, whenever I got out on my own and really had to do you know, some research on, you know, what am I eating and why am I eating what I'm eating, you know, it became clear that there's other choices. There's better choices out there, and there's better ways for me to pursue health naturally.
Well, and it makes it difficult. If you have a body who is healing from a chronic illness, or any of these kids that we're treating with the cannabis or any of the pharmaceuticals that they're throwing at them, we are basically setting them up to fail because their body is now fighting this other thing that they're not used to. And one thing I found interesting when it came to meat, and I'm surprised I'm not a vegetarian, but the vaccinations they use in the cattle and some of the chickens are actually the vaccines that have been removed from the marketplace for human consumption. So we can't give it to a human directly, but we can give it to the food that you eat and use it in that way. And I found that to be really interesting, but we're still ingesting the same poisons that we can't just directly give to ourselves.
Yes.
You know,
yes, you have to use use organs to cleanse that from your body.
Right.
And
More
stress and more use of an organ that may already be, you know, overused.
Yes.
So yeah, you're absolutely right. It is paramount to know where your food comes from and exactly how it's raised and what's in the food that you're eating. So that brings up a little bit about chiropractic and just natural health, you know, what we need to do to let the health that resides within our body really shine. And in chiropractic, it is removing interference from the nervous system. Chiropractic focuses on the nervous system in the spine mainly, and removing that interference so that we can get messages from the brain via the spinal cord and spinal nerves to the organs, to our body, so that our body knows what's going on and what it needs to do. The our brain runs the whole show. It's the captain of the nervous system. And you know, whenever that flow is impeded by a subluxation, which is a vertebral bone that is one of your vertebras that is slightly twisted or just misaligned or a little bit out of place, it puts pressure on the nervous system. And that pressure is basically like kinking a water hose. Once you have the kink in the hose, the water doesn't flow. Chiropractors specialize in removing that interference, removing that kink, mm-hmm. and letting the water flow. And that allows for good communication from the brain to the organs so that you can fight off these pesticides that are in your diet better, more
efficiently.
More efficiently, yes.
Well, when you start getting kids, my son would be one example, 16 years old, he's 5'5". He's not going to cooperate. He's not going to get on your table. How are you going to be able to help? Are these kids helpable as well? Are they kids that you can adjust and you can, through chiropractic care, help them? And you might have adults that are like that too. I mean, I'm sure there's some people that come into your office and they're being forced by someone else.
Oh, yes. I rarely see anyone in the office that has a good story of chiropractic. You know, it's their Uncle Bob went and saw a chiropractor one time and he it didn't work for him. Well, that's true. Chiropractic is a lifestyle. It's a way of pursuing health over the course of your life as it should be, as it's meant to be. You don't pursue health in one day during your life. You're not going to do it at 20 and just be able to coast into your 60s.
So are you saying there's no McDonald's at chiropractic?
Exactly. So, I mean, yeah, getting people on the table for chiropractic is, you know, that's the rub. That's what you have to do. They have to get on there, and a chiropractor needs to assess the spine and assess the nervous system and find out where the interference is at. And then he, you know, gently removes that. And it's, you know, chiropractic is, it's the second largest healthcare system in America.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. And it's the largest drug-free healing profession in the world.
Awesome.
So chiropractic's been around, chiropractic itself has been around since 1895. I mean, you can go back to 400 BC where Aristotle was, you know, I guess classified as maybe a bone setter, and all these bone setters have come from that time. And that's exactly what they did. They recognized the importance of the manual adjustment and to removing interference in the spine, even at that time. And these days we've kind of, it's much like our diets. There's so many options out there these days. There's so many different ways, you know, to for health, or at least we're told. With chiropractic, the philosophy is that health resides within us. It's an innate intelligence, meaning it's born within us. We already have it. If I cut my arm, I don't have to tell my body to heal that. I don't have to tell my body for my heart to beat. It just does it naturally. Right. And, you know, the body is so much smarter, vastly smarter than anybody on this planet, yet we use the minds of those on this planet to tell us what our body needs. And that's what I, that's why I chose chiropractic, is because it just puts the body in a position to do what the body knows how to do. And that is, has made the most difference in my life. And it makes a lot of difference in the lives of my patients. And that's the way that, people find true health and know how to take care of their bodies and take care of themselves.
So if someone's not in this area and can't come to Vibrant Health to use your services and do what needs to be done for their best health, how does someone go about interviewing a chiropractor in their area? Let's say they're in New Jersey or Oklahoma, California. How do they go about interviewing a chiropractor to find one that meets their needs and can help them with those recommendations?
Yeah, absolutely. You want to do your due diligence there as well. You want to know, your chiropractor well and develop a relationship there. But the good news is there's so many different branches of chiropractic, and the different branches really just vary in the way that they remove the interference in your spine. Some use tools, some use tables that drop, some use their hands. But the good news is about that is the research has shown that across the board, you get the same results regardless of what chiropractor it is you're seeing and what technique that he specialized in at school or seminars that he's gone to and the education that he's pursued.
But you have to go more than once.
But you do want to... Yeah. Well, I don't want to say you have to go more than once, but that seems to be the case with the human body. You know, I don't ever want to tell somebody that, you know, that they're not going to get well after one adjustment, just because I don't like to tell people that. But I don't tell them that one adjustment's going to fix it either. It's a process. It's pursuing health. It's keeping your body at an optimal level. And if you want to keep your body functioning at an optimal level and being able to basically absorb the punishment that we put on it through our daily living, through dietary needs, through,
medication choices.
Medication choices.
Sitting positions. So much goes into health.
Yes, exactly. Chiropractic is a great choice, non-invasive therapy, to find health and to pursue the health and get your body to 100% and functioning the way that it was meant to function.
Okay. So if someone in this area, Colorado Springs, Denver area, wants to come see you, where are you practicing at?
Yeah, I practice at Vibrant Health Clinic. The name of my office is Living Large Chiropractic, and I am located at 627 North Weber Street, suite number 2, and that's in Colorado Springs, Colorado, 80903.
And if you want to call, what would the number be?
If you would like to make an appointment, you can reach Living Large Chiropractic at 719-466-1145, or you can go online to vibranthealthclinic.com and you can schedule an appointment there online as well.
Wonderful. I actually think we'll be coming to see you soon.
Yeah.
Thank you for joining us for this Whole Healing Hour with myself, Jenny Storms, registered nurse, cannabis nurse, and also with Dr. Blake Large, who is with Living Large Chiropractic. You can find him at Vibrant Health Clinic in Colorado Springs. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you for having me.